Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Joe, and my pronouns are they, them.
And it's just the two of us this time.
It is. It's just a tiny podcast.
It's just a little baby podcast. Because we've recorded a lot of things this month.
So many things. This is our third Sunday in a row recording things.
Yes.
Folks.
So. Which leads us to our next point of, if you have not yet watched our Hot Ones Challenge, please do.
Please do.
Because it's this delightful duo, but with hot sauce.
With hot sauce, and neither of us threw up, and I'm really proud of us for that.
We did so well.
It lasted all the way till bedtime for me of, I'm not sure how this is going, but
I went home I got and there. Ate more wings.
Yes, me too. I ate up through seven when I got home.
That's amazing.
And I did throw out the last three, because I was fair. Like, yeah. You know, I want to be.
You don't need to person, relive but, De Bomb or yeah. Pepper X.
Though, if we do more episodes with other people, I'm not saying I wouldn't.
Yeah.
All right, again.
I would do it again. Yeah. Josh Mallerman, we made him laugh, and he shared the link on his own. Like,
cute. Thank you, John.
Found it on YouTube and shared it to
so
his
cute. Yeah. Yep.
So
I had
cute.
One of the book club members texted me. It was like, I loved your episode of the Hot Ones. I was like, good. So
we had so much fun.
If we can coerce more coworkers into it, we may do more, but we'll try. The one that we did do.
Yes, I uploaded the full thing to our YouTube channel, and that is linked on our social media and stuff. But then I also did break down each wing into its own little TikTok. So you can also go to our TikTok and watch the individual wings, which is fun. Because, you know, someday YouTube will allow vertical video.
Yeah. But today is not that day.
Yeah. And it's a lot harder to take a horizontal video and make it look good on TikTok than it is to take a vertical video and make it look okay on YouTube. Yeah. So
no,
it's not ideal. Me as a perfectionist editor, I was quite frustrated.
Ryan had a ring light and like a setup, and we had a
setup.
Producer. Reagan was our producer, and
it was a whole thing, but we would love to do more. And I did also order the season 23 sauces, which they just released.
Okay, well, there it
is. So we could even, although, it's, I mean, De Bomb and Pepper X are still the same.
The same, but hey.
I ordered the ones that were different,
I like hot sauces.
I enjoy them. And they're so good.
They are really good.
Like, the hot ones, hot sauces are so flavorful.
Yeah.
They're really good. My husband was putting sauce number two, which was the really garlicky one.
Oh, yeah.
He put that on his pasta the other night. And he was like, oh, man, this is so good. And we put one of them on our chicken last night. It was like sauce. Oh, it was the whiskey one. It was like sauce six, I think.
That's good.
Anyway,
hot sauces.
If you have no idea what we're talking about, go look at our social media.
Watch the Pedro Pascal episode of Hot Ones at the
very linked.
Least, like, you have to. And they just had John Oliver on. I need to watch that.
I have to watch that one. But yeah, so in our weekly newsletter that goes in every Tuesday, in this upcoming one, I obviously talk about our Hot Ones challenge. And when I was like, you may be familiar with Hot Ones, and I linked to the Pedro Pascal episode, because of course I did.
And friends, the way this all came about was we have a little, like, gift book, little book of pocket hotties that is just Pedro Pascal quotes. And it started with us reading some quotes from his Hot Ones episode, and then things got out of control.
Yeah.
Because
everyone knew that I buy the Hot Ones hot sauces every single year. And they were like, hey, should we do Hot Ones? And I was like, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yes, we should.
And through all this, my husband and I discovered a really great way to make our chicken wings. And so, they were delicious.
Yeah.
So anyway, go watch our Hot Ones episode. It was really fun.
Yeah.
And we'll probably do more. But today, We're not just here to talk about hot ones. No. It's Black History Month.
It is Black History Month. Yes, and it's Toni Morrison's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Toni Morrison.
I think she would have been 93.
Wow.
I did the math at some point today.
That's amazing.
But my memory is not great, so.
We miss her. So we are, you know, obviously first we'll talk about what we've been reading recently. Mm-hmm. But then we're going to talk about some really good books by Black authors
that we think you should read.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that
we'll
in a minute.
We'll get into some of that.
But first let's talk about what we've been reading. Again, we did record 2 weeks ago, our previous episode. So we probably don't have a ton to talk about, but I know that we both kind of held back a couple things.
Saved a couple things, so yeah.
So first I will talk about something that I'm currently reading. I'm currently reading a few things, one of which is this forthcoming horror novel by local author John Durgan.
He's very nice when he's come and stopped in.
Yeah. He's so nice. And we are planning an event with him this June. The book comes out in May. It's called Kosa. And he described it to me as Tangled, so the Rapunzel movie, Tangled meets Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah, I was looking at the cover. There's a lot of hair.
There's
a lot of hair and a very scary face. Yes.
A witch. And she eats the hair it's
okay.
Horrifying. It's horrifying. And I am loving it so far. I'm only like a third of the way through, if that. It's really, really good. It's really scary. I will say, like, you know, if you don't like bad things happening to children, maybe skip this one. Because, I mean, it's a Rapunzel horror story, so you know bad things are going to happen to at least one kid. Bad things happen to a lot of children, so there's that. I also just started reading Barrier Gaze by Chuck Tingle. It comes out on July 9th. I just started reading a digital arc of this, and it's, I mean, I don't want to say it's better than Camp Damascus, because I'm not done yet, but I am equally as thrilled reading it.
Nice.
It has made me laugh out loud in the bookstore while reading it.
Love that.
And it is also terrifying. And so, like, the basic premise is our main character, Misha, he lives and works in Hollywood. He is a writer for television and movies and things like that. He writes queer horror. That's his main genre of choice. Mm-hmm. He himself is queer, but he is, as he puts it, LA out. So he's out to, like, the people in LA, but he is not out at home in, I think it's Montana. He, in our first chapter, has been pulled into a meeting with the network, with his boss, who has told him that the characters of the show that he's been writing for 3 years, who have been very clearly heading towards the season finale where they finally get to kiss as a mm-hmm. lesbian couple, hooray, on TV, he's now being told you can either have them kiss and be openly gay and then kill them,
mm-hmm.
or you can not do that and let them live as straight women.
Yeah, well, that sounds familiar.
Sounds like Hollywood, doesn't it? He's real mad about that, and he is going to try to take the third option, which is to tell the studio where they can shove it and write his own ending, even though it will probably end his career there. And they will write their own ending, and, you know, who knows what will happen. So that happens. And then he leaves that building and goes, sees a horrible, misogynistic, like, producer guy, whatever, being gross to a woman. He goes to tell him off, and a piano falls on that guy.
Oh, mm-hmm. He deserves that.
He deserved it. It's hilarious. That was the part that I, like, yelped out loud. I was like, oh, my God. From that point on, Misha starts seeing some of the characters that he's written. And he thinks at first that it's just people cosplaying and, like, but being creepy about it and, like, stalking him. And but then the more he sees them, he's starting to think that maybe they are real. And that's where I'm at. And it is so creepy because he has written some very scary characters. But it's really fun because he's going through this as a writer of horror. And so he's, like, thinking as a writer, how would I write my characters out of this scenario? And things like that. So it's, like, really smart, really good, very scary. I'm loving it. So that comes out in July. I highly recommend pre-ordering that. It's, so, so good. What else? Those are, like, the two main things that I'm currently reading. Nice. That I am just absolutely loving. I've also finished some very good books recently. So I just finished Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby, which, you know, is not a new book. And everyone who's ever read it has loved it, and I'm one of them.
I have not read that one. I read his other, his first one, that Blacktop Wasteland.
But he's a fantastic writer. It was one of those things where I've always wanted to read his work, and just had never gotten around to it. And then I saw that we had it as an ALC, and I am Facebook friends with him, and I was like, I should read your books. And so I read that one, and that is a gay couple. These two men who are married with a child have been brutally murdered. And their fathers, who are both homophobic, one is a black man who's homophobic, the other is a white man who's racist and homophobic, they team up to find out who has murdered their boys and destroy them. They're both ex-cons. It is... it is a wild story, extremely bloody. And they both go on this journey of acceptance and growth towards, you know, allyship and anti-racism throughout the course of the story, and kind of, like, learning more about their sons and each other, and, you know, just, it's really, it's a very, very good story. And I liked it a whole lot. And at the end of the audiobook, they there was a preview of the audiobook for the his next one, which is All the Sinners Bleed.
Yes.
Which opens with a school shooting.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I want to read this.
Yeah, I think that one just came out in the past, like, 6 months or something.
And I don't know that I knew what that one was about.
Yeah.
But it's a black sheriff, and he's, like, in his kitchen, like, talking to his dad, and he gets, like, a call over the radio, and it's the dispatcher is like, my nephew's at that school, and that's where the preview ends, and I was like, oh my god. So intense. But real good. I also read a book that is coming out later this year called The Eyes Are the Best Part by Monica Kim.
That one had a great cover.
It's a bright blue eye being held by chopsticks. Great cover. It's a story of, like, basically the birth of a serial killer. Due to like racism and hate crimes against Asian folks, and the fetishization of Asian women in particular. And our main character, she gets real fed up with just the world and men, and develops a taste for eyeballs. It's a whole vibe.
Sure.
It's great. It's really fun. It's one of those books that you're reading it and you're like, I kind of see where this is going. Maybe? Okay. You know what? I'm on board. Whatever happens, I'm here for it. Go for it. I also read 19 Claws and a Blackbird by Agustina Basterica, who famously wrote Tender is the Flesh. It was very good. It's a bunch of short stories that are, they're dark. I wouldn't honestly classify every single one of them as horror, but they're all dark. And some of them are horrific, but it kind of like blurs the line between horror and just sort of like dark literary fiction. But they're all very, very good stories. She's a fantastic writer and really flexes that in this collection. It's a very good collection. And then a few other books. I listened to How to Raise an Anti-Racist by Abram X. Kendi, which was fantastic. You know, we know that he is an incredible writer, and I was delighted when he came out with the How to Raise an Anti-Racist, because as a parent of white children, I was like, yeah, I need all the help I can get. And it was great, and I was very pleased to discover that I was doing a lot of things right, which was good. And it's set up in a really cool way in that, like, he is talking through his own journey as a father and kind of him figuring out how he can, you know, raise his child to be an anti-racist in our world. And so it's like stories, his own personal stories with, like, I'll say like tips and tricks, but it's not really presented that way. It's just sort of like, and like, we should be doing this instead of that. It's very like inclusive, like he is part of it. It's so, like, for anyone who like is intrigued by it and like has children and wants to be kind of working towards their own anti-racism and their kids' anti-racism, like, it's not like preachy, it's not like you should be doing this, it's like, yeah, we as humans should all be doing this
is a problem for our society, it's an institutional thing, and we need to work on it each individually and with our communities and families.
That one was super, super good. And then I also just want to shout out a book that we just got back into the store. It's called Crowned, Magical Folk and Fairy Tales from the Diaspora by Karen and Regis Bethencourt. Oh, this book is gorgeous. It is.
I'm not sure I've seen this.
Oh, my God. I'll have to show you after this. It is this big, like, coffee table book-sized book. And it's filled with photography of black children. As like fairy tale characters, right? As princesses and princes and queens and all this stuff. You know, as the Little Mermaid, as Rapunzel, Cinderella, what have you. And so it's that, but then it's filled with these stories of, so like the first section is your kind of classic fairy tales, but they're retold, centering the main character as a black person and making them more feminist as well. So like, if you've ever wanted your fairy tales to be like more feminist but still have like the flavor of like the be the fairy tale you recognize, but like, you know, they save themselves and then the prince is just kind of there. That's
nice.
We've got you. And so they're like a little bit modernized. Some of them are definitely modern day. Some of them, it's like, okay, this is kind of vague. This could still be in the, you know, ancient times. But they are all of, like, the names have changed and things. So Snow White is, what is it? She's, Snow White is, I think, like, Ebony Black or something. Like, she has, like, a different. And so it's, and, like, Cinderella, I think she wears, like, white sneakers covered in pearls. Like, they're very cute. and they're just kind of retold in a really beautiful way. And then the other two sections, there's the middle section is folk tales from around the world, like black folk tales from all over the world. And then the final section is like modern day folktales.
Okay.
Nice. So modern day black stories that are like being written right now. Nice. It is so gorgeous. And like, so the physical book itself is a work of art. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, this was created by two photographers, and their whole thing is that they photograph black children as the main characters of fairy tales. Like, that's their whole thing that they do. And then they, like, you know, did these stories as well. So, like, highly recommend coming in and getting the physical book. But also, I did listen to the audiobook, and most of the stories are read by black children.
Oh.
And it's so cute. It's so cute.
That is
so
fantastic.
Like, highly recommend that as well.
And is it geared more towards adults, kids, anyone, ages?
Anyone. I got it for my kids to read with them. I believe we have it in the children's folktale section.
Okay, nice.
The last time we carried it, we had actually put it in with the art books because it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
But I actually was like, no, I kind of want this in with, like, the Grimm fairy tales and things like that. But honestly, like, I, as an adult, really, really loved it. But then I also, like, have been reading them with my kids, and they've been loving it,
fantastic.
Too.
Because that's, like, folk tales and, like, fairy tales can get super dark. And
they didn't rewrite the Grimm versions. They rewrote, like, the Disney versions, basically.
Okay. Yeah.
So they never get crazy dark. They're really beautiful. They're well written stories as well. It's, and honestly, I just come in and look at the photographs. They are gorgeous. It's so beautiful. And like, my kids have been flipping through it, like picking their favorite photos.
Oh.
Like, and they're like, they could tell right away. They're like, this one's Rapunzel. And like, this one's a Little Mermaid. And like, there's the Anansi story, Anansi the spider, and it's like a little boy, and he's doing like the Da Vinci thing with like the multiple arms, but there are spider legs. Oh. It's so cute.
Love that.
So I read other things, but those are really the ones I really wanted to talk about the most because I love them so much. What have you been reading, Jill?
Yeah, I've been kind of reading all over the place. A few things I'm going to mention kind of in our more main part of our episode. But I read Most Ardently by Gabe Cole Nivoa, which is a queer trans retelling of Pride and Prejudice. It's a YA book. It's part of the Remixed Classics series. So I've talked about The Little Women, which is So Many Beginnings, and Self-Made Boys, which is Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
So I really, really like this one. I listened to the audiobook. It is the second eldest Bennett child is a trans boy who, and it's set in Regency era, who is trying to figure out how to live his life within the structure of this society that he lives in. And Darcy is there and is just very Darcy.
Being his Darcy self.
Fantastic. And I don't want to, like, spoil anything, but it's a really great retelling that I think acknowledges, like, does a really good job of retelling the story and also giving queer and trans people their own story. Like, every time, I keep seeing so many ads for Bridgerton.
Mm.
And I've watched some of it, and I'm just like, if I could just get one queer Bridgerton sibling, I would be 100% on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
it's so unrealistic that none of them are queer.
There are like seven of them.
There are, so statistically, there should be at least one, if not two or three.
Yeah, like,
just
come on.
And like they have, there's one who's like all artsy. Like, come on, yeah. It's pretty. Anyway, yeah, I think and
Bridgerton is fun. It's
Bridgerton
fine.
Is great.
However,
and it is great. It does. Has some really great representation. Mm-hmm. I don't want to undercut that by saying that it's also. I'm just like, just could we have one?
Yeah.
And they also have. There's the younger girl who's like very. Come on, mm-hmm. you could anyway. Anyway, but so this is a lovely retelling and Regency romance for trans queer people, and so this kind of got me on a Jane Austen kick. I'm in the midst of a Jane Austen kick, I guess. So I had started listening to Emma back in January of 2020, February of 2020, because that's when the most recent movie came out,
right.
was coming out, and I was like, I've never read Emma. Mm-hmm. I should. Oh, like, the audiobook was free or something. I don't know. And then the pandemic happened, and I was like, I can't read. No, thank you. good. And so I just actually listened to it all the way through.
Oh, wow.
And Emma is such an interesting main character, because Jane Austen, I think she said, you described her as a heroine only I could love.
Oh, my gosh.
And she absolutely is. She's a rich, bratty, I mean... Yeah. Anybody who's seen Clueless is based off
Emma.
But there is something interesting about her as a character,
mm-hmm.
because while she is bratty and rich and very privileged, you can also see her as a very smart young woman in a period where she didn't have a lot of opportunities to exercise
mm-hmm.
her intelligence, and thus does some messed up things messes around in people's lives. And it's just, she's interesting. And I did watch the 2020 Emma, and it is very, very good. I really liked it. Costuming is phenomenal. And
oh, nice. Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet. I watched, so... Do you remember when Hank Green and company did the Lizzie Bennett Diaries?
Oh, my God. Do I ever. That was, like, my personality for 2 years. Don't
Same.
Even... Yes.
Same. We this could is... do a whole episode just breaking down
This is Ryan and I's shared history is the Green Brothers. It's fine.
True. You're getting a sneak peek.
Yeah.
They did a few classics.
Yeah.
They did a Frankenstein one, and they also did Emma Approved.
Yes, and I never watched it because I hadn't read Emma, and I was like, I'm so weird
yes,
about
it. And I did watch it without having had read
Which is
Emma.
Fair, and like,
Which is fine.
Reasonable.
And it is everything you just said. Yeah, yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
I love that you are in your Jane Austen era because I love adaptations of Jane Austen mm-hmm. works where, like, I have a hard time with the original works, but I will eat up an adaptation.
Yeah.
Like, the Lizzie Bennett Diaries, like I said, was my personality for, like, a year.
Yeah.
I remember, like, when the final, like, few episodes were coming out, and I was like texting with one of my friends, like, as we were watching it,
I remember sitting
unhinged.
In the hallway in my college because mm-hmm. It was my freshman year of college when it was kind of wrapping up, and just like watching between classes, being like, it was great. It was so immersive. Like, there's so many
Twitter accounts that would tweet in real time.
And you should absolutely go back and watch it if you haven't watched it. But I do think there was that special thing of real time Twitter updates, real time.
It was
and
very
like,
cool.
Lydia had her own spin-off vlog and this and that, and you know,
there is
Kitty is an actual cat.
I believe you can still find the archive on their website, which has everything chronologically, including the Instagram and Twitter posts.
Okay, phenomenal.
They also put out a book.
Yes.
Which was the actual diaries, and that was very fun. I did a big rewatch when that book came out because it was dated, so it was like her diaries, what she was writing, like in between filming, and they were dated correctly.
But I do think that is a good thing to bring up, is I think Jane Austen, I remember very specifically, I had read Pride and Prejudice in high school, and was like, oh, okay. Like, I liked it fine, but it wasn't, like, my thing. And I think the Lizzie Bennet Diaries kind of helped open me up to being like, oh, Jane Austen actually was not just a great writer, but she was doing some really interesting things, and the way she was writing about women and the fact that she was writing as a woman were really quite revolutionary. And so I think if you are a person who doesn't quite, can't quite connect with the originals, that reading retellings, watching, there are some, like, real good movies. I know we're a book podcast, but, like, there are some really good movie adaptations and kind of understanding what she was doing.
Yeah.
I think is worthwhile.
I think it'd be interesting to do a some sort of, like, non-book display where we have, like, Pride and Prejudice, and then movies that you might not realize are an adaptation.
Oh,
and, like, Emma, and, like,
I kind of love that.
Right? That's, like, have, like, the book, and then, like, something next to it that has, like...
There are so many of the, like, early aughts Shakespeare, and you're like, oh, that's
There are so many things that I've watched that I, years later, find out they're adaptations of something, and I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, and, let's be real. I have read books that I don't realize till the very end are adaptations of Alice in Wonderland, which is, like, my entire thing.
Yeah.
The Wonder Bread Summer, I had no idea it was an Alice in Wonderland. I was finding funny, like, connections, but I thought it was just wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The T. Kingfisher book that's an adaptation of an Edgar Allan Poe, I had no idea until the very end.
So I remember I read On Beauty by Zadie Smith, which is a retelling of Howard's End, which I had not, I haven't read the whole book. We had read parts of it in one of my classes, so I didn't notice, and then I got to a scene and I was like, hold on, this is Howard's End. So yeah, it's very
a fun display of things you might not realize are adaptations of this.
We
should do that.
I think that's a good idea. Okay, so those were just my Jane Austen ones. I also read a YA graphic novel. It comes out, as of recording, it comes out this week, so it'll be out by the time this comes out. It's called The Fox Maidens by Robin Ha. It is based on the Korean myth of the nine-tailed foxes, which are, there are various versions of it, but either foxes that can turn into beautiful women to lure men to their death, or women who've been turned into foxes because of some trauma. And so this is about a young girl who is the daughter of an important man in historical Korea, and there are rumors that her mom is one of these fox women. And the way that impacts her life. And I will say, she's a fox. And the main character is a fox maiden. And it's queer. And it's really cute and lovely. And I really, really liked it. I brought it in and was like, brought it to two coworkers being like, you should read this. And they were both like, yes, we have. And I was like, oh, okay, great. But it's, yeah, it's really good. And I really enjoyed that one. I also am almost finished with The Hanjin Murders by Seishi Gyokumizo, which is, he's a, like, golden age murder mystery writer. The book originally came out in 1948, but was just translated to English in the past, like, 10 years.
Okay.
And he's really well known for his locked room mysteries. So,
I love a locked room mystery.
Yeah, if anybody's not familiar with this trope, it's the idea of, like, somebody was murdered, but all the doors and windows were locked. So how did the murderer get out?
Mm-hmm.
And there are, you know, various, there, you know, Conan Doyle did them, Agatha Christie did them, Edgar Allan Poe was
Ruth Ware
like
Ware does them. Like,
yeah, Poe was like the original. Yeah. So like. Or an early one. So it's a well-known thing. And I am not always the fastest reader of physical books. And I started this book on Thursday, and I'm almost done with it.
That's
and
awesome.
I am going to buy the second book in the series as soon as, like, tomorrow, so I can bring it on my vacation.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, it's basically these two, this married couple
are found dead on their wedding night, and the house that they're staying in, it's a little, like, kind of guest house on the family property. Everything is locked, but the murder weapon's outside, so it couldn't have been suicide, so...
Oh, my gosh.
They, and it this series follows a detective, you know, not professional detective, that classic, and he's just a very funny character, like, disheveled and, like, always kind of a disaster and, like, but really knows what's going on. It's fun because I feel like a lot, especially, like, this golden age murder mysteries, you have, like, Poirot prior to that, like, Sherlock Holmes, who are just, like, very meticulous, very organized, so he's an enjoyable character, so really enjoying that. And then the last one I have to talk about is Martyr by Kaveh Akbar, which Reagan mentioned briefly because she had just started it when we recorded the last podcast. It's funny, she put it as her hand-selling book.
Pick of the month.
Pick of the month. But has not written a staff pick of it. I've written a staff pick of it, so I don't know how it's going to pan out if that ends up being the one that sells the most. But
that's really funny.
That... It is so good. It is, I can't stop thinking about it. I am trying to make all of my coworkers read it. It's hard to explain. It is about a young Iranian man, or Iranian-American man, who is obsessed with martyrs. He's obsessed with the idea of having a meaningful death. He is in recovery, he's sober, but has struggled with addiction in the past, and ends up going to New York to meet an artist who is dying in the Brooklyn Museum. That's her art exhibit, is she has cancer and she's going to die in the museum, and people can come and talk to her about death and life and all of these things.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so
that's
it's
powerful.
Yeah, it's damn. It is intense, and it is just, like, the most real, not realistic, but most resonant with me experience of depression and, like, existential dread in living in the current moment. And, like, there are a few passages where I'm, oh my God, you're calling me out. Like, there, I almost want to say it's like, you know, the, experiencing the existential dread that comes with living in late stage capitalism. But there's a passage in the book about how the main character uses the term late stage capitalism as like this kind of catch all of like, and I'm just like, oh no, it's me, oh no. And like talking about the shoes he chooses to wear that are like, I think they're Vans sneakers that like, because he wants to look or relate to the working class, he doesn't want to look too pretentious, and it's just like, oh, it's so good. And yeah, it's a gorgeous book. It's, you know, I apparently am becoming a person who calls books of the year very early, but this is probably going to be my book of the year. It's so good. And it's another one with a yellow cover. Apparently, I'm into yellow-covered books, so...
I'm here for it.
Yeah, you should absolutely come read it. It is...
Yeah.
And, like, it's blurbed by everybody. Want it to be blurbed by, like, Lauren Groff, John Green blurbed it. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Tommy Orange, like, his is on the cover. It's, like, he's one of my favorite writers. And Kaveh Akbar is a poet. This is his debut novel.
Oh.
So, like, the writing is also very beautiful. So
yeah, everyone I know who's read it is, like, obsessed with it. Like,
I can't stop thinking about it. I brought it in to Sam, and I was like, hi, Sam, you have to read this now, actually. Sorry. Like, it's going to be a classic of that. Like, I don't know, subgenre of just existential.
I look forward to it winning several awards.
I cannot imagine it is not going to win one of the major awards this year, because it's just so phenomenal.
Amazing.
So yeah, that's what I've been reading lately, a lot all over the board.
I love it. Some good variety in there for both of us, actually.
Yeah. We're expanding our horizons here.
So Joe, let's lead in our main topic here.
Yeah, so I think we have not done a Black History-focused episode in the past, and I think part of that is because we are both white people and don't want to be,
We want to acknowledge
that, as opposed to when we always do Pride episodes, that's a very...
Yeah.
personal thing for me and multiple staff members. And so, but I think there has been a lot of talk on the internet, specifically TikTok, about reading diversely and what that means and what your obligation is to read diversely. And I think, so there was a specific video of a woman going on like a 10-minute rant about how, like, you can't force me to do this. I just read to escape. Mm-hmm. And it's concerning that it's... And it's not an acceptable point of view for a white person. No. And, yeah, nobody can make you read any sort of book. It is completely up to you. But people can are also allowed to judge you for the way that you are... way you are reading and what you're promoting. And I do think that people give this excuse of, like, I read to escape. If you're a person who is refusing to read Black authors or authors of color, queer authors, any of disabled authors, you are also probably not the person who's putting in a lot of the work outside. It's unlikely that the person who's complaining about being forced to read diverse books is also going out there and calling representatives right. and doing some of this, mm-hmm. you know, going to protests and all of these sorts of actions mm-hmm. and actually working on anti-racism.
Right.
So I think part of what we wanted to do with this episode was talk about some fantastic books by Black authors across a lot of different genres, so it can be, even if you're like, oh, well, I just read romance. Well, okay, you have a lot of options. We have a lot of different recommendations for a lot of these subgenres, so whatever you're interested in, you don't have an excuse, and there is an obligation, I think, as a person, especially as a white person, to engage with other people's experiences and stories consistently.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think.
So, yeah. That's and so, where... the way. So, usually, how we do this is that we'll, you know, go through and we'll talk about a bunch of books, and then those books will be the ones in the shoppable list when we post the episode. We're going to do things slightly differently here, in that the shoppable list is going to be much, much longer than what we're talking about in the episode. So, essentially, Joe and I are going to highlight some books, some authors, because like we said, there is so much, and so we're going to highlight, like, a few things, but then the shoppable list is going to be much longer. So I'm going to really, really encourage you guys to go look at the list. And I will also, like, at the top of the shoppable list, I will also link our other curated lists for if you are looking for a very specific genre. We have those as well.
Yeah.
So the generic episode list will have everything. But then we will also break it down by genre and those so that you can be like, well, I just want to look at, you know, Black sci-fi. Okay, great. Click on that. I hope that makes sense. So we're just going to kind of highlight some. We're not going to keep you here all day. But just to give you sort of some like flavor all across the board of Black authors, just because there's so many amazing Black authors writing. There's, you know, from forever. It's just, it's so many good books, you guys. So, right off the bat, I will kick off because, you know, I talk about horror a lot. So I will get this out of the way. A lot of these you will, you know, have heard me talk about before. But what I want to start with is Out There Screaming
phenomenal.
Edited by Jordan Peele. I mean, God, what a book. But the reason I want to talk about this is because, for me, an anthology is such a perfect way to discover new authors, like mm-hmm. new-to-me authors. And so I just want to, like, run down the authors that are in this book because, let me put it this way, these are black authors that Jordan Peele is like, they're so good, I want them in my book. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know they're good. You've got N.K. Jemisin, Rebecca Roanhorse, mm-hmm. Cadwell Turnbull, Leslie Nneka Arima, Violet Allen, Erin E. Adams, Tananarive Due, Justin C. Key, Ezra Clayton Daniels, Nnedi Okorafor, L.D. Mm-hmm. Lewis, Nalo Hopkinson, Maurice Broaddus, I've met him, he's awesome, Ryan Amilcar Scott, Nicole D. Sconiers, Chesia Burke, Terrence Taylor, P. Jelly Clark, Tochi Onyebuchi, like, guys.
So many.
That's a huge list. You may know a couple of those names. You might not have heard of any of them.
Yeah.
Either way, like, that is a list of black authors that Jordan Peele was like, I love their writing. I want them in my book. So that right there is a list of black authors to look up, right? And I did that with a lot. I read The Reformatory by Tananarive Due mm-hmm. because she was in Out There Screaming, and I loved it.
And I think there are absolutely a way to explore new to you authors, but there are also a lot of authors who it will be the first time they're published, or they'll have something forthcoming, or they've published one book and it's gone kind of under the radar. So it does, there will be those big, like, anchor,
like the N.K. Jemisin,
some of these, and then there will be lesser known authors, and it can really give you that good.
Yeah, for sure. So I just wanted to, like, start there, and that's true with really any genre. If there's an anthology, there's, you know, look at the table of contents and see who's in there, and maybe, you know, look them up and see what else they've written, if anything. I also want to just shout out Victor Laval, who wrote The Changeling and Lone Women. I also met him recently, and he's so nice. He's so nice. Oh, he's such a sweetheart. And his books are incredible. And, just, I feel like modern-day classics, right? Like, he's just crushing it. There's... And again, like, I won't delve much deeper there into black horror because you've heard me talk about, you know, The Spite House and The Reformatory and all of that.
Have you talked about The Reformatory on here? Because I feel like I don't know what that one's about.
So that's the one, maybe I've talked about it in, I've talked about it somewhere.
All blurs together.
The Reformatory by Tananarive Due is a book that gave me a panic attack while I was reading it.
Incredible.
It is about, the justice system, but set, I forget when it takes place, this young black boy gets into a scuffle with a white guy, and despite, you know, his sister showing up at the courthouse and trying to explain what happened and all of that, the judge sends him to the reformatory, which is this school for boys. And it's all young black men at this school. And they're treated super great. The end.
Yeah.
No, not at all. It is a horrific, horrific place. There's a lot of torture that happens in a place that they call the Fun House.
This reminds me of Nickel Boys, like Colson Whitehead. There, it's a very, very similar.
Yeah. But on top of that, this young boy can see ghosts. Which you can imagine some of the ghosts that he's seeing at this place. And so it's this story where you're following him at the reformatory, and he's like made some friends, and he's just like trying to survive. He's just trying to get through. He's only sentenced to like 6 months there or something, and he's just trying to get through. Yeah. And then you're also following his sister, who has like hired a black lawyer to fight for her brother and to get him out of there and to save him. And it's the whole thing, like, when I say I had a panic attack, I mean, I literally came into the store, I'd been listening to it on my drive in, and I was like putting my stuff down, and I was like, what? My heart is beating so fast, and I'm like shaking, and I'm like, what is going on? And I realized I was still thinking about the book.
Yeah.
Like, it was so tense the whole way through, and man, the writing is just incredible, but it is dark. It is it is a challenging book, because, like I said, there are just white men torturing young black boys who, like, really did nothing except be black and get caught. You know, like, literally, the little boy that you're following, he kicked the shin of a white man. That's all that happened. He kicked his shin, and he was just trying to defend his sister.
Yep.
So it looks at the justice system, and it looks at, you know, incarceration and how unfair it is, and it looks at the way black folks are treated by white folks, and it also is a ghost story. And it is so good and so scary, and oh my god, Tananarive Due is just, I highly, highly recommend looking up her writing, because I think this is her first full-length novel, but she has written a lot of short fiction, and she's just absolutely incredible. Her story in Out There Screaming, I remember it being one of my favorite. I mean, I loved all of them, but I made a special note of her name so that I could look her up later, because I loved her story so much. So, yeah, highly recommend that. So there's some black horror for you. I also want to, I'm gonna run through some, like, genre fiction.
Yep, I think that's, we kind of split it up of Ryan's doing genre fiction, I'm doing other things.
Other. So, super quick, just some black romance novels. Jasmine Guillory is an amazing romance author. I really loved her book While We Were Dating. She's been on the podcast. You can go listen to my interview with her. The Neighbor Favor by Christina Forrest was a really, really fun one. Really good for people who love books about books, like books about, like, the publishing industry. Because that's kind of a thread in that. Not even kind of, like, it's literally one of the main plot points revolves around an author and publishing and things like that. Talia Hibbert is another absolutely incredible romance author. She does the Brown Sisters trilogy, so, like, Act Your Age, Eve Brown, and, like, those ones, really, really good. She also often will have, like, disability rep or queer rep, things like that. Honey Girl by Morgan Rogers. I know that Morgan doesn't super love being classified as their book being romance, because it's really more of, like, a coming-of-age story. But it is one of the best love stories I've ever read. Honey Girl is just in my, like, top 10 of all time. It is just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful book. So, yeah, those are some romance. There's a ton more, like I said, that we'll put a whole list on the website, but
I want to shout out to Queer Black. Romances that I really enjoyed, and these will be on the list, but Devon and Chris Plan a Wedding by Cynthia C. Higgins. Fantastic. You know, fake dating on a reality show. And then The Romantic Agenda by Claire Kahn, which is an asexual romance. It's
Love
very
that.
Good and very fun, and but gorgeously written.
I love that. And then, super quick, some black sci-fi fantasy. So, obviously, N.K. Jemisin. Like, I will scream it till my voice is gone. If you have not read any N.K. Jemisin, what are you doing with your life?
Me.
I know.
The thing about N.K. Jemisin is that she does so, she writes so broadly. Like, she'll have, like, a series that's, like, very, like, futuristic sci-fi.
Yeah.
And then she'll have a series that's, like, blending sci-fi and fantasy together, and it's mm-hmm. more historical, and it's, like, whatever. And then she'll have, you know,
urban fantasy.
Like, she's just, she's all over the place, and everything she writes is just incredible. Oh, she's amazing. So obviously my favorite series of hers is starts with The City We Became.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm actually due for a reread of that because it's just so good. But she's also done, like, How Long Till Black Future Month. And, she's got her, the Inheritance trilogy. Like, she's kind of, like, anywhere you fall on the sci-fi fantasy, like, preference level, like, she has something for you. So please check her out.
And she was, I can't remember, it was Inheritance or Broken Earth trilogy that won the Hugo 3 years in a row.
I think it was Broken Earth.
I think it was Broken Earth.
But she won three, which is unheard of.
Yeah, all three books in the trilogy.
Yeah. But then there's, I mean, classics. You've got, you know, Parable of the Sower, Octavia Butler.
Octavia Butler, like, Kindred, absolutely, like, Kindred. I think I want to read Fledgling this year.
Yep.
But just, I mean, the foundation of sci-fi.
Literally.
Especially in, like, 20th century mm-hmm. sci-fi. Octavia Butler is everything.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. Let me just go down my list here. We've got an anthology called New Suns 2, Original Speculative Fiction by People of Color.
Mm.
And this one, it is not just black authors. It is just, you know, authors of color. So, like, Nevo is in there. But there are some excellent black authors in there as well. So, again, anthology. Look through the table of contents. Find some good new authors to read. And then there was another anthology called Africa Risen, which is all black authors. And I believe that one is also speculative fiction, but I think that one edges more fantasy than sci-fi, I have not read that one yet, but just looking at the cover, it looks a little more fantasy than sci-fi, but I believe it is, I mean, it's speculative fiction, so it's kind of both. But then we've got, like, Janelle Monáe wrote a sci-fi book called The Memory Librarian and Other Stories of Dirty Computer.
Mm.
There's a book called Dahlgren by Samuel R. Delaney. P. Jelly Clark has one called Master of Gin,
mm-hmm.
which is supposed to be amazing. I love P. Jelly Clark.
Yeah.
He wrote Ring Shout, which is an amazing horror novel. You know, Nnedi Okorafo, like, there's just Rebecca Roanhorse, like, there is so much. And I know that when you're kind of in genre fiction, it can be really, it can seem like it's all just white men.
Yeah.
And I recognize that. And so, like, hopefully you will find some good ones on this list, but I will also say that, like, as booksellers, like, you can absolutely come up to us and say, hey, I really love reading sci-fi, or I really love fantasy, or I really love romance. I'm looking to read more diverse authors. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah.
Because, it can be hard to be going through and just try to make an assumption based on a name, right? Yeah. Like, that's not... It's not easy to do. It's not easy necessarily to just walk through the shelf and try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But we have lists.
And I am always amazed by the number of people who will come up asking for, like, books about trans women in genre fiction, and they'll preface it with, this is probably a weird question. Like, it really isn't.
It's not.
Y'all, we have the list. We have personal recommendations. We can also help you find other resources if we don't have, you know, if what we have read isn't what you are interested in, we can absolutely find other resources.
Absolutely.
So it's never weird to be super specific of, I want fantasy by a black author. Great.
Yeah.
We can do that.
We can absolutely do that. I'm going to recommend another one, and then I'm going to do kind of like a transition book into...
Okay.
that will lead into Joe's recommendations. So first, I want to shout out this book that Marvel put out called Black Panther, Tales of Wakanda. It's edited by Jesse Holland, and it's a groundbreaking anthology from the African diaspora. And so it is, again, like, Tananarive Due has a story in here. Cadwell Turnbull has a story in here. It is all Black authors writing Black Panther stories. So they're writing within the world of Wakanda, which is really, really cool. And then the one that I want to recommend next and kind of like transition into more like nonfiction or litfic or other things like that is a book that my husband actually read called Dreams of Wakanda, which is another Marvel book, but instead it's nonfiction, and it's like artists and writers and, you know, just kind of people from all over, like Hollywood and things like that, writing essays about what Black Panther means to them. And so
that's
it's
really cool.
This really amazing collection of stories written by Black people about how meaningful a Black superhero is.
Yeah.
And Wakanda, all of Wakanda. It's a really amazing book. Like, my husband would be reading it, and he would just, like, stop me and, like, just read a passage. Like, and I feel like he discovered a lot of writers and folks that he had not previously known through that. And so, and that one is more nonfiction. I just kind of want to, like, talk about that for just a second of, like, you know, when you're looking to, like, diversify your reading, think about things like, oh, I really loved Black Panther.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's any, like, books about that or books within that world. Because, yeah, there are, like, media tie-ins and anthologies and things like that. So it's like, you don't necessarily have to be like, oh, I want, you know, a very specific thing. You can be more kind of, like, broad with your searching and, like, all right, what's some, like, Black media you've enjoyed? Yeah, you could probably find books within that or similar to that, or, you know, it's a good jumping off point.
And there are definitely, I feel like, IP books, which is when people are writing within an established world, or getting more and more diverse authors. And, like, I know Star Wars, those books have had a lot more people of color writing stories, and thus more people of color included in the world. And so I think
Star Wars and Marvel both have been diversifying the books within. Which,
it's about time.
Finally,
but yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there are definitely a lot of ways. And I'll also mention this is in middle grade, which I didn't do many recommendations. But Rick Riordan Presents is a really great way to introduce your kids to more authors if they are Percy Jackson fans, because it is Rick Riordan's personal imprint, and he is specifically looking for authors who are writing in the similar vein of Percy Jackson, of usually based in mythology, but their own personal mythology. So I know Rebecca Roanhorse has a series within that. There are tons and tons of them, and they have Rick Riordan's name and the little Percy Jackson seal on them.
Yes.
So your kid is going to connect it with Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
And that is really a great way of tying to things that they already love. And again, it is a similar premise, so they're going it's good for people who liked Percy Jackson.
And again, like, I don't know if you have other, like, middle grade recommendations, but like, you can absolutely go over to, I mean, any of the booksellers, but especially on the kid side, and say, like, hey, do you have any, like, diverse, you know, chapter books or whatever? And, like, we do, and we have lists, and we have opinions. They're like, Amari is one of my favorite series of all time. So like, again, just reiterating, like, please ask us if you aren't sure, if you don't already have like our little list in hand. Absolutely ask us. It's our favorite thing.
Yeah. And it's also, I think we talked a little bit about this last episode, but being intentional with what you're reading, and I think this also applies for what you're giving to your children, and because just society in general is so focused on white people, white men, white straight men, all of this, and especially as a white person, you have biases, that you might not know or intentionally be acting upon, but if you go back and look at the books you've read, you might be like, oh, I am picking mostly white authors. And you need to intentionally think about it. The publishing industry, the society at large, are going to prioritize other voices. So making that intentional choice to look for other stories is important and worthwhile.
Absolutely.
I kind of have a little bit all over the place of non-genre fiction. I'm going to start with classics, and I think classics can be kind of fraught term because traditionally, historically, it has left out a lot of non-white men.
Yeah.
Or people who other than white men.
Yes.
I have lots of thoughts. We don't need to get into the canon wars of the 1990s, but Ryan has heard me talking about that. But I also do think it is valuable and worthwhile to look at kind of some of these really foundational texts in different communities and different types of writing and work it into what we're thinking of as classics. And I just read The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison for the first time. I had read Beloved in high school and then again in college, which is just an absolutely phenomenal book. Toni Morrison is one of, if not the best prose writer out there.
Yeah.
Her books are so gorgeous. I have my copy of Bluest Eye. I kept just highlighting like random phrases. They weren't like quotable phrases. It was just like, oh my God, you chose to say this in this way. I cannot even imagine how you got there. And yeah, it's just, she's just one of the best writers of all time. And if you haven't read her, go do you should. She's
run,
so
walk.
gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous writer.
Yeah.
I just started Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, which I can't believe I've never read. Also another one, but it was one of those books where as soon as I started it, I was like, oh my goodness. Okay, this story has a voice and a very, it's stunning. And I'll mention The Color Purple because that was, I read that a while ago, but it was one of those books where I was like, I cannot believe I haven't read this before.
Yeah.
It's so good. I'll have a list of some other recommendations, but definitely Toni Morrison. You have to. She's so
we're giving
great.
You homework.
We're giving
right
you
now,
homework.
And it's to go read a Toni Morrison book.
And then come talk to me about it. And then getting into kind of contemporary lit fic, I'm currently listening to My Monticello by Jocelyn Nicole Johnson, which came out a few years ago. It's a collection of short stories. The audiobook is fantastic because there's a different narrator for all of the stories.
Nice.
The first story is a live recording of LeVar Burton. Yeah, so good. And that story had a moment in it where I was like, I, like, gasped out loud in my car driving.
Ugh.
It was, oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And, but then it has the, like, main, there's a novella within this collection.
Got it.
Called Monticello, which is about a community of majority black folks, but then also there are some white people who end up there who it's kind of an apocalypse situation. Oh, okay. They live in Charlottesville, and there are white militants taking over the town, maybe the city, maybe the world.
Sure.
Unclear exactly. And they go to Monticello.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
As a where they are spending, because their neighborhood is no longer safe, and what that means. And the main character is a descendant of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. And so I am only about halfway through the novella, but it's just really remarkable writing. It was a book that I originally put on my TBR because it was one of Roxane Gay's Audacious Book Club.
Oh, that's why I know it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was on that, like, original list, which I also would encourage you to look at her list, because that's been going on since 2020 or 2021.
Yeah.
And always has phenomenal books, black authors, other authors of color. It's
great. We had
great.
The shoppable list for
we
it.
We did, yeah.
The that, original. Like,
didn't she share it?
She did, because I was scrolling Twitter at like midnight and she
how it
announced it, and I was like, oh, all right. And so I made a shoppable list at midnight, sitting on my bathroom floor, just like, and tweeted it from the Gibson's account and linked it, and she went awesome, and she sent all, she linked us, she didn't just share the tweet, she linked us on her website.
Yeah, it was great.
It was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, Roxane Gay knows who we are.
Yeah, so definitely. And I don't have Roxane Gay on any of my lists, but
read Roxane Gay.
Like, she's my great. Goodness. So yeah, that's fantastic. A couple others I want to highlight. Girl, Woman, Other by Bernadine Evaristo. This won the Booker Prize, but it was during the year where they made her share it with Margaret Atwood for the sequel to Handmaid's Tale, which I will never not be annoyed by. Lots of politics.
What a choice! Okay.
It was a and it is set in mostly in London, but definitely all of the stories are in Britain. And it isn't exactly short stories, but each chapter follows a different person. And it's just really gorgeously written, and I think it deserves way more attention and acknowledgement than it ever got. And I will always, we have a little shelf of Booker Prize winners, and if The Testaments is the only one up there, I will always put Girl, Woman, Other on there, because it's just, it's getting so, it got so overlooked because.
Justice for that.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, we get it. You didn't give Handmaid's Tale the Booker back when it came out, so you're not, but, like, this is, this was such a, it was a better book. And so definitely read that. And then I'm also going to mention Homegoing by Yaji Asi, which is a stunning book. Like, I just, it's been years since I read it, and it's still so viscerally in my mind.
I feel like we sell that one a ton.
Yeah, people.
That is like a consistent bestseller for us.
And it's, yeah, it's, and it, I feel like a lot of book clubs do it, which is good. It is about two siblings in Ghana. One is kidnapped and enslaved, brought to America, and the other is, remains in Ghana, and it follows their separate families through, it's from 17th or 18th century through modern day. Absolutely gorgeous. I like don't think I know a single person who hasn't rated it 5 stars, because it's just like that kind of book. And then getting a little bit into nonfiction, we mentioned Ibram X. Kendi already. Stamped from the Beginning is a fantastic history of racism and black anti-blackness in America.
And there's a YA version and a kid's version.
Yeah, so they're both, so I also know some people, because Stamped from the Beginning is a like 700-800 page book.
Yeah.
who adults who have read the YA version because it's shorter, and both the YA and the kids version were adapted with Jason Reynolds, who's a phenomenal writer as well. So those are definitely great. And I think there was just a graphic novel too.
Oh my god, I think you're right.
Yeah, there are so many versions of Stamped.
Abram was like, I'm going to make this as accessible as possible. Yeah. Everyone read this, please.
So there are a lot of options there.
Yeah.
And then I just read Madness, Race and Insanity in Jim Crow Asylum by Antonia Hilton, mm-hmm. who was at the New England Booksellers Fall Conference and spoke about this book, and it
sounded
was
amazing.
Incredible. She's just so clearly deeply involved in this story, and it is following a asylum in Maryland from its beginning to when it closed and the aftermath of that. And it begins with a group of black men being taken into basically the forest of Maryland and made to clear the land and build this asylum. And then when they are done, they are institutionalized in said asylum. And it is looking at mental illness within the black community. She tells a really fascinating story of, I believe it was her father's cousin who likely had schizophrenia and was believing that he was being followed. But he was also a part of the civil rights movement and like the 1970s black liberation movement. And you know what? The government did follow those people.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's really interesting looking at different ways the asylum, and that's generally the term she's using, was used as a prison or a punishment for people who just who were just not doing what,
what society
wanted
them to do.
Including just people who were protesters in the civil rights movement. Like, it was not. And then talking about deinstitutionalization, which was a whole movement to get people out of mental hospitals, but did not then build up the community resources that the government said that was going to catch this. So then, you know, people, and she talks to so many people who worked there, had family there, who lived there, people who were residents there. And being like, there were, you know, throughout the history, it was not always a great place to be. There were a lot of flaws up till the end, but like, what are we doing now?
Yeah.
We haven't helped anybody. And so, it's a really good look at racism and mental illness and very personal. She puts a lot of her own and her family's stories in.
Wow.
To the book, so very, very good. And then I'm going to go through some recommendations for, I've titled this theory, but like, it's nonfiction, social justice oriented books. The first one I want to mention, because I just finished reading it and like, I can't stop thinking about it, was Freedom is a Constant Struggle, Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundations of a Movement by Angela Davis, which came out in 2015.
Okay.
Which I think it's really interesting read, because I know where things go and where we end up in various situations, but it also is a really great example of how black women lead so many of these movements. Angela Davis was talking about Palestine and Palestinian liberation in 2015 and before then, and that, you know, she, and it's so interesting, and a lot of the essays in it are talking about Ferguson, because it is directly in the aftermath and kind of the foundation of Black Lives Matter. And I think one of the things that was most impactful to me is consistently through, and some of these are essays, some of them are interviews, some are speeches she gave at
colleges or, so various things, was underlining the fact that all of these struggles are interconnected and that we can't keep, we shouldn't separate Black liberation from queer liberation, Palestinian liberation, all of these different movements, and talked about her experience as throughout her life working for social justice and what how she believes is best to build a movement that can get things changed.
Incredible.
And I'll also mention another one of her books that I read was Are Prisons Obsolete? About prison abolition. Phenomenal. I will also mention The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, which is also an abolition, like a foundational text in prison abolition. I will say that one is much more textbook, like it's a little bit more dense than Are Prisons Obsolete, but both are phenomenal. Looks at the way the prison industrial complex has become the new way that we oppress Black folks. And then a couple others, Sister Outsider by Audre Lorde, Hood Feminism, Notes from the Women the Movement Forgot by Mickey Kendall. That one's more recent. Sister Outsider is a little older. Both phenomenal books. And then the last one is an anthology called A Bridge Called My Back, Writings by Radical Women of Color, edited by Gloria Anzaldúa and Sherry Moraga. And it is not just Black authors, but just incredible essays by radical women of color, and there are definitely lots of Black women in there. And then I will also mention some poetry books. I did a whole list of poetry by Black authors because I realized I had been reading a lot of it, and I listen to a lot of poetry. So if that's something that you want to get more into, I definitely recommend that. Negative Money by Lillian Yvonne Bertram and The Study of Human Life by Joshua Bennett were two phenomenal ones that I read last year as part of the New England Book Awards. Really, really great. I just read Bless the Daughter Raised by a Voice in Her Head by Warsan Shire, which was gorgeous. That she has been featured in Beyoncé songs. Involved in Lemonade. And God Themselves by Jane Nichelle. I just listened to incredible. Absolutely astonishing. I feel like poetry I always struggle to recommend because you can't summarize it. But gorgeous, gorgeous books. And I will, I have a much longer list on the website that we will link to. And those are the things that I'm wanted to mention.
So again, lots, it's so much more even than we have mentioned here, as you will see when you click on our shoppable list. I just, to reiterate, like, be intentional with your reading. You will be a better reader for it. I love reading diversely. Like, I think that's one of the things that, like, I saw that TikTok rant, and I just was like, wow, can't relate, because I love reading diversely. I think the stories are better.
And, like, it also, it just makes you more empathetic and thoughtful in both in the way you read, but also just in the way you interact with society, and you should be curious about other people's experiences. That's just like a fundamental thing I believe about being a person.
I think a huge issue that our society has is a lack of empathy, and I think when you read from a point of view other than your own, when you read a point of view other than your own, you gain empathy for folks who don't look like you or don't act like you, and I think that's a great thing. And I will also just say, like, you know, I obviously there are a lot of books out there that talk about, you know, the oppression and the racism and how hard it is to be Black in America, and those are excellent books and valid books. But if you want to read some Black joy,
We've got that too.
There's a lot of
There's a lot of that too. So don't feel like, oh, I'm going to read diversely and it's going to bum me out. Because that is not necessarily the case. If you want to read some Black Joy, tell us that and we will certainly give you our favorites. A lot of the genre fiction that I mentioned, a lot of the genre has Black Joy in it, especially the romances. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They're having a great time. So, yeah, browse our lists. Come in and talk to us.
And I think I just want to end this by acknowledging all the work that a lot of Black-owned bookstores have done to help me diversify my reading. Loyalty Bookstore, Harriet's Bookstore. There are tons of them, and you will see a lot of places posting about them.
Yes,
this month.
I will include the link. Libra FM has keeps a list of Black-owned indie bookstores, and you can change which bookstore you support with your Libra FM membership. At any point, you can change it as many times as you want.
Jump and back and forth, do whatever.
Yeah, and so I know a lot of people for, you know, Black History Month or, you know, just randomly, you know, maybe they'll have a different, they'll support a different bookstore every month or what have you. And so Libra FM has a list of Black-owned bookstores. So I will link that in our show notes so that you can think about supporting them. Because indie bookstores, we're all friends. We're not competitors. Friends. We are giving you permission to support some Black-owned bookstores if you like. But, yeah, so diversify your reading and then, like, tell us about it and tell us your favorites. Like, if you have favorites that maybe we didn't mention here or if you don't see them on our lists or whatever, shoot us an email and let us know, because we are also still learning and we're still, you know, working to diversify our own reading just on our own. So, you know, contrary to popular belief, we have not read every single book in the store.
No.
So by all means, like, if there's one that you're like, oh, I you got to read this one, like, let us know. We love that. So, okay. Also, like, really quick, this is, it's off topic, but Joe, when you were talking about the, like, Israeli-Palestine, I do just want to shout out that right now over on our buddy podcast, Jack of All Graves, Corrigan is doing a four-part series detailing the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And so every week she is going through the history and kind of explaining how we got to where we are, and things like that. And she is a researcher in her day-to-day day job, so she's doing an amazing job. So I will also link to Jack of All Graves, because I highly recommend checking out that series. I think it's really important. And we have a shoppable list on our website for the books that Corey has used to do her research. So
yeah, there are some phenomenal books. If you feel like you are underinformed on this topic, I have great news.
Yeah. Yep. So those links will also be in the show notes. I did just want to mention that at the end here. And of course we have our Jack of All Graves book club as well, which I will also link. We meet once a month and talk about really good books. But let's do our little wrap up now. You guys did it. You made it to the end. Two episodes in February, you lucky ducks, plus a hot ones. You guys are just getting so much Ryan and Joe this month.
Now we're going to go home and nap.
We're going to go sleep. But first, a reminder about our partnership with Libra FM. Listeners who are new to Libra FM can receive two digital audiobooks for the price of one credit by using the code LAYDOWN at checkout when they start a new membership. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com for a shoppable list of everything we talked about, plus all of the others on our list that we didn't get to today. Click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. They're all there. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on most of them, and those links will be in the show notes.
Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore.
Bye!